I know, exactly. There you go.
Enlarge vacant buildable lands model.
All right, I think we're all ready to go. Who's starting off? Oliver? Your mic on?
There it is.
Good morning, commissioners. Oliver Ojiako, Community Planning Director. At the last work session on employment forecast, the board asked that we have additional discussion on employment land so that the board can fully understand what is it that we do and how we treat employment lands in our model. So this is more of an informational item to the commissioners. I'm not asking for any direction from the board. So if you have questions as we go through this work session, feel free to ask me. We have Ken Perot here from our GIS. Bob is out, but Ken have been doing this since almost 20 years now. I recall in the 94 plan we did run maybe 50 or 60 versions of the VBLM before that plan was adopted. So Ken is very familiar with the model. So today what we will do is walk the board through how we, you know, treat employment lands in the model, some of the challenges. But again, we have had 20 years of experience with it, so we think the model is as good as it can be. And I'll turn it over to Ken and let him just go through how we treat employment lands in the model, and then we'll ask questions. This is part of staff preparing you for your hearing coming up on April 1 for you to select the employment target for the 2016 plan update. Ken?
Good morning, Commissioner. As Oliver has mentioned,
it's on.
Yeah. So that we will be looking at the vacant buildable land model, focusing on the employment lands.
But now?
Maybe it is. Yeah. He's just not talking into it.
So what we're going to be looking at is looking at the employment lands that are based on the commercial and industrial models. So we'll start off with a quick overview of the models. Then we'll take a quick look at some of the challenges that we face when we're modeling employment lands, take a look at some of the parcel sizes associated with the employment lands, and then move on to the developable lands that are calculated by the model. So the employment lands are classified in the model as commercial or industrial based on comprehensive plan designations. The commercial model does include mixed use and office business park type uses. This is a map of the battleground area. You can see the comprehensive plan designations, classifications for this area. You'll notice that there are some city-specific type classifications. They're kind of specific to each of the different jurisdictions. So in battleground, we have a mixed-use residential and mixed-use employment class. So the model needs to take into account these special cases and make sure they are classified in the model. The jurisdictions also add new classifications from time to time. Here's an example where they included or added a airport designation to the battleground UGA, so we need to make sure that we account for these new designations and they're included in there. Also like to add that the jurisdictions do change comprehensive plans periodically, where they might take some commercial land and convert it to industrial, or they might go back and forth. So whenever they do make those changes like that, it does affect the model outputs. So now that we have the lands classified as either commercial or industrial, we start looking at what is vacant, what is underutilized. So we look at the building values to determine what's vacant. So anything with building value less than $67,500 we consider vacant. Underutilized, we look at it a little differently. We look at the building value per acre. So if it's less than $50,000, we consider it's underutilized property.
We changed that for the 07 plan because it hadn't been changed for quite a while. Is there going to be a recommendation to update that number? Does it mean that the dollar amount, you know, should be based on some reality of what, you know, values are, you know, within the community? And so it was changed then, but it's been...
It's been 7 years, and this is still pretty much a whole lot have not changed in terms of the value. I think you will recognize that you know, during the recession, values went down and now it's beginning to pick up. So this is still within the range of what the assessors is, how the assessors is looking at assessment.
So you run that by the assessor already?
They've looked at this, they've looked at this, and we're constantly taking their own input, and every time they do the assessors, we use that information because we don't run the model until the assessment comes in and they do the rollover before we do the assessment. So all that is taken into consideration.
That's a good point. That $67,000 looks like way low. I would think that we ought to use a realistic number, and so that number hasn't changed since in 7 years?
Probably not 7 years since that number's changed. And keep in mind, we're looking at, you know, what land really doesn't have any structure on it to determine it's vacant. So what we're trying to capture here, you know, mobile homes or small outbuildings, things like that, or buildings that aren't really used for any type of real...
This is just for commercial.
Yeah. Just commercial, right.
It's totally different for residential.
So the question is, should that be looked at? I would think if it's commercial and industrial kind of property, you're not going to run a consider a mobile home as a high best and highest use developed property. I would
right.
think that number would be much higher.
Yeah, that's why we're considering it big.
Right, but I would think it would be considered vacant if it was less than $100,000 or something like that. So the question is, just to make sure that we don't exclude properties that really should be in our focus, I would think that number would be really important.
I believe that we would capture the lots that have $100,000 development on it under the unutilized classification when we start looking at the building value per acre. So if you do have a structure that's worth $100,000 on 10 acres, you know, you start looking at that building value per acre, then it would probably be considered underutilized.
And again, remember what I said earlier, that the assessors will go out, do the assessment, put that data into the assessor's database before we run the model. So we are capturing the assessment that if this number were to change, that will also be reflected in the assessment of any given property in the county. Yes, they can help us with that if this value needs to change.
The model is for us to be able to set policy, right? So we can build the model that is that number used for something else?
It is assumption that goes into what we classified as vacant or underutilized. It's not a policy tool. You can give us the assumptions that we can input into the model. For example, what are we saying is vacant? And how are we classifying what we're saying is underutilized? That's just a direction that you can give staff. Check with the assessor's office, see whether their values have changed. If it's changed, how can we adjust for that?
That we're kind of upfront on this whole process, I would think that certainly please check with the assessor's office so we end up with something that we don't question and think, why in the world is it so low? But it really would be reasonable that we would end up producing the kind of spots on the map that ought to be included in this process.
Yes.
Thanks.
We further classify lands if they are considered constrained lands. So these are the types of constrained lands that we consider. So if we have vacant or unutilized lands and they're constrained, then they get classified as constrained. This is a map of the southern part of Clark County, this portion of it. And the green areas are the constrained lands. As you can see, they largely cover the county. You'll note the white areas, especially in the Vancouver urban growth area, are already, you know, in an area that is open for development. As we get around the fringes of the urban growth area, you can start to see that it's going to be more difficult to find lands that are less constrained as you expand the boundaries.
And this is, if I may add, this is what I think this is not new to the county commissioners. This is where staff says that the county, pretty much the entire county, is wet. However you look at it, you know, but we do our best to utilize this information and try as much as we can. The board directed us in 07 to avoid critical areas to the best that we can in the land that we are bringing in. But there is, it is hard to say that there is no land we are bringing into the UGA that doesn't have some issues with it. But this is just a representation of what our critical layer shows us.
All right, I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why we should recognize what can we do in some of those areas, not what we can't do.
Yes.
Because each one could be a little bit different.
That's true. And there's other tools we can use, whether it's, you know, wetland banking. There's so many other things we can do, not just saying this is not developable. But I'll let Ken continue.
That's a good question. So what effect has environmental constrained lands had on employment land? Well, we found that parcels with environment constraints do develop. When we first started working on the model, we assumed that certain critical areas would not develop. But as we started monitoring the model, we did notice that some of those lands did actually develop. And so as a result of that, we have modified the model to account for some development or constrained lands.
You modified it when?
That was a while back, probably 2005. Yeah, probably the 2004-2005 plan update.
Yeah, because we had a random percentage, didn't we?
We had a percentage that would, you know, based on different classification, it'd be 0% if it's this classification and 30% of this, and then we changed it.
Well, what we used to do is we used to say, you know, that if a parcel was 50% constrained, then we assume that, and it had, we had constraints that were type 1 and type 2, and the type 1s we assume wouldn't develop, type 2 would have some development. Now we consider all constrained lands can develop, and we separate them totally out from the parcel, so you have, a parcel could have constrained land and constrained land.
Is it working?
Yeah.
It is working, yes. You will see as we go through this process that it is.
One of the things we see here is the difficulty of creating jobs, having a large enough parcels to do that, and we have in the room economic development, Jeff back there, so I want to make sure that he knows the resource and stay close in touch with you folks.
Right, and I think, Commissioners, what you can, the way to look at this chart, look at the top bar that says what we predicted and the actual. You look at what we predicted that is vacant and has some critical land on it. Look at what is, what actually developed within that. You know, so that's how to read this chart. And as we go through some other slides, you can really see that some of the areas that we're saying won't develop is actually developing in one form or the other. You will also see this. We've shared this type of information with the commissioners when you look at the residential model, where we say some areas won't develop. Often what you will see, not in all the cases, but what you will see is those residential area will develop where the developable area and the undevelopable area becomes one of, becomes one parcel. So it could become vegetated area, whatever you want to call it, greenway. It's the green belt behind, and it makes it easier and profitable for the developer to say, "Oh, this is the reason why this parcel is priced differently, whatever the case may be, because of the attributes." In this case, it could just be the greenway and other features, but they do develop.
Employment lands are more challenging to model than residential lands as well.
Still working on that with the assessor's office to try to nail that down as best we can. You know, as they move into their new PAC system, they're changing a little bit of how they do their business, so we got to make sure we keep up with that in the model as well. And there's more than one approach for appraising commercial properties. Basically, for residential, you know, they look at the value and they appraise your property based on that. When they start looking at commercial properties, they could use an income approach. So they look at, you know, what the lease rates are and things like that and come up with values based on that. So that's another thing that we have to account for in the models, make sure we're collecting information from the assessor's office based on those different approaches. And then commercial industrial redevelopment occurs in unpredictable areas. You know, the Hazeldale Fred Meyers that's going through redevelopment right now is a good example of where you wouldn't predict that there'd be redevelopment. You got the downtown Vancouver waterfront area that's redeveloping. Fisher's Landing.
Yes. Yeah. Fisher Investments in the middle of the woods where you would never expect, you know, necessarily that type of development. So it's amazing.
We have that in the model to show you. At one point, we said it wasn't going to develop. Yeah. So.
Right. So if you just walked around, you'd be like, how the heck is this going to happen?
Right.
And then you look at it, you're like, oh, that's beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, so now we can kind of take a look at some of the areas around the county and see how the constrained lands have worked out and look at some of the other, you know, challenges that we've faced. So this is the Highway 99 I-5 corridor. You can see it's mostly built out now. You know, there's still some land out there available, but it's important to note the darker gray areas are developed lands that are on constrained land. So you can see that there has been development occurring where there's been constrained lands. You can also see, as Oliver mentioned earlier, as development occurs, some of the constrained lands are getting converted into parks and open space, which is the darker green area. So they are utilizing those lands to make them an amenity. Just focusing in on the Hazeldale Town Center, which is one of the developments that hasn't happened too long ago. You can see they were able to build on the constrained lands. Again, this is the Fred Meyer redevelopment site. So the model shows this is already built and wasn't included in the inventory other than a small little vacant parcel there. So, you know, they're going to be taking down buildings and building new ones, which will bring new jobs to this area that weren't predicted in the model. If we cross the street, across 78th Street, you can see some areas where the model did pick up lands that could redevelop, and that's kind of getting into the building value. We've got the old breakfast restaurant, which is a building is beyond, you know, its usefulness. Some of the hotel there, I think there's some of those buildings are boarded up. So basically the appraisers say the land is much more valuable than the buildings, so we are able to capture those in the model and show them as lands available for development. Moving up I-5 to the north, we get to the 134th Street area, Salmon Creek. And again, this is an area that when we first started running the model, we assumed that development wouldn't occur on the constrained lands. But as we transition to the 2014 model, you can see that the area has developed quite a bit, and there has been development on the constrained area. You got the Legacy Hospital and commercial properties along 20th Avenue. So all this development on this constrained land has impacted the road system in this area and required, you know, it's reached its level of service and has required new road improvements in this area. And then moving on up to the Ridgefield Junction, you can see there's quite a bit of land up here available for development for employment lands. There are some constrained lands also in the area. But if we focus in on the Union Ridge development, you can see that some of this has developed. Some of it's developed on the constrained lands. But there is still a good part of that development that's available for, you know, employment. Why hasn't it developed yet? Well, you know, there has been some concerns with the sewer capacity at the junction, and now the Discovery Corridor wastewater project is opening up this. Will be opening up this land for more development. Moving out into the Camas area, you kind of see the same thing. Development's occurring where there's constrained lands. Some of the constrained lands are converting to open space and parks, which is the darker green area. So they are being utilized there. And then, as you mentioned, the Fisher Investment or Development Project, this is a good example where they're developing the lands in the unconstrained areas and incorporating in the environmental concerns as part of the design of the site, making it more of an amenity or campus or park-like setting. So they're just trying to utilize that as much as they can and still develop the area. So do you have any questions about the constrained lands or challenges?
Are there any upgrades? I mean, we upgraded significantly in 05, whatever, you know, in that time frame as we were getting ready for the 07 plan. Are there additional upgrades that you look at based on your experience from then to now? Are there ways to get better than we already are in identifying how much is going to develop, how much can we reasonably anticipate will develop in different kinds of constrained areas instead of it just being about the environmental constraints as a whole, like in wetlands we think it, you know, versus steep slopes are critical. Is there anything to tighten it up and make it even better?
We did a pretty good study on that back when we made the modifications and I think we nailed that pretty good, but there's always a chance to look at it some more and see if there's any.
With the downturn, it's made it a little more difficult. Can we look at our years of experience since we made the change and say, okay, you showed us the graph of that we didn't do so well in the old model, mm-hmm. what was going to develop. Can you do a graph based on what we do now on how we're doing and how we're tracking and how close we are with what we predicted and what's happening?
Yeah, we can take a look at how the lands have changed over time and what has converted.
One area that commissioners, we are going to be focusing on going forward, you know, given the previous work session relating to stormwater, with the new rates coming online, that's one area that we are going to have some time to be able to say, okay, what have developed per the new rates, and how is that changing? How much is this devoted to infrastructure? So that's an area that we need more data to inform us whether that needs to change or not. I have asked our city counterpart to who are following the new rates to let me know what they're seeing since they're operating under the new reg. Of course, there are some areas that, you know, infiltrate or percolate much better than some other areas. The center doesn't. So it's going to vary, but until we start following the new reg, we will have some time to update the rate that we are using now for infrastructure. That's one area I think changes can be made, but I don't have any information to inform me on changing that at this point.
Vacant buildable lands model, its purpose for, I mean, the whole reason for this and this model, does it only serve one purpose? To serve as a basis for us to understand what that number is going to be for our comprehensive plan update? That has to do with the job, employment, growth. What's that number?
Employment forecast or employment target. It's going to be part of that because what we're trying to help the board understand is how do we use the model for showing what is available. And based on that, we can then be able to say, you've already set a job target. Do we have enough land available to develop to meet that job target that you said, or what other things do we need to do? So there is a relationship to this model and the job target and other decisions that you will make to help us prepare for the update or what we do. The only thing that I will add is that we are going to be working with the cities and other stakeholders. Is there anything that we are not showing, or are there new information that they can bring to the table to help us enhance this model? We're always going out and grand truthing this, so, and we're also providing it to the building industry, if you will. I will be at RGF this afternoon also to continue to have that conversation. Is there any new information, anything new that they can help us to improve our model? But this is the tool that we use to say, here's how much is available.
Right now we're asking ourselves, is it vacant? And that's one reason why that billion dollar is so small. But I think maybe a more pertinent question is it developed for jobs, for employment? And that would, if that's really the question, then that I would think we would raise that number up, because certainly something with a, like a mobile home that's going to have to be removed, or a building that is so old it's going to have to be demolished, even if it has some value, is really not answering the question, is it developed? It's not, if it's not going to serve as a significant asset or facility to house employees for business to thrive in that on that property.
That's true, but you will also agree that staff wouldn't go out there. We don't do assessment. We're relying on the assessors for their own assessment of properties out there. So whether that value changes or not, even if you change the value and we come back and say, okay, instead of X number of acres being available, it's now much smaller because we changed the value. I want that information. I want the ability to change that value to be based on the best available information. We're relying on the assessor's database for us to do this work. So I don't want to take just to change the values in terms of how much is available or how much isn't by changing the...
You're getting the answer to what Commissioner...
Yes.
You know, we're just... He's flipping the script. He's talking about the vacant and underutilized side of it.
Underutilized.
Right. The other side of it is the developed.
The developed, yes.
We have that mapped as well. And our goal, our challenge is to figure out, okay, what is... You know, it kind of looks developed, but it's not. It's underutilized space, or it's vacant space, even though there's something on it. And then we can count that to our inventory of what is developable.
Right.
And if I understand correctly, the smaller that dollar value on that property, the more land appears available. So the fact, I'm sorry, the less. I like that it's really kind of understating things. That means we're conservative. We're not saying there's really more developable land out there than it is. We're
right.
Really, there's a little bit of reserve just because of how we do this. So I think if we're going to err, we're erring on the right side.
And I agree, Commissioner, and we are indeed doing that. I think at some point we came back because we've had 20 years experience with this to say, what is our error factor, if you will? It could be 5% plus or minus, and there was some conversation on that error factor. But, you know, having worked with this for over 20 years, I think the model is as good as it can be.
Yeah, especially in the commercial industrial part, it seems like it is trying to capture those areas where there's underdevelopment there and considering it vacant or underutilized. So I think it's doing a fairly good job there.
We are going forward right now with economic development, and we've given the go-ahead to hire a consultant to put together, similar to what you're doing also in two different areas along the railroad and some of the Discovery Corridor area. And it's basically going to be information of what it would take to develop each piece of property, having to do with the critical area impact versus accessibility and terrain. So I want to make sure that we work together with that, or don't duplicate the work in those areas.
And the next part of what is the parcel size piece of it.
Right. Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because some other organizations that have looked at how much is available out there have relied on this same model. So we will be coordinating that effort as we move forward. EDC used this model to do the land for jobs, you know, analysis, even though it has not been completed. So they're relying on this model as well. So we'll make sure that we coordinate our effort. There are different issues when you look at those areas. One, as you mentioned, is access. Some issues are there is no infrastructure, or there is infrastructure. So it's still different issues, but we will coordinate effort as we move forward.
Okay, now we're going to take a quick look at property sizes or parcel sizes in the county. Most of Clark County has been divided into smaller parcels, for multiple reasons. I don't want to list them all. But looking at the commercial acres by parcel size, you can see that there are, you know, a good amount of acreages or acres available in the 20 or more parcel size, 20 acres or more parcel size, and a decent amount in the 10 to 20 acres.
Is this vacant and buildable parcel acreage, or is this what's already built?
Yes, sorry for not clarifying that. Yes, we are looking at the vacant and underutilized lands and including constrained lands in this chart. Gotcha. We're not looking at the built.
Thank you.
So, and a constrained, but developable.
Well, they're part of the inventory right now.
If they're critical, they're not buildable. They're not included in this. I would think we'd want to be able to pull the undevelopable land out of this.
Well, right now we're just looking at gross acres. We will get to calculating net acres, which stands out.
Okay.
Right, this is looking at gross.
This is
all parcel as it is on a graph.
Yes, to come. Yes. Good. Go ahead.
So you can see, you know, there's a decent amount in 10 to 20 acres, and then kind of a mixture for the smaller parcel size. Same thing for industrial. You can see most of the land is in on the 20 to 50 acre parcel size, with some up over 50 parcel size, and then a mixture of the smaller acreages. Getting to the part. Properties that are owned by the same owner, and they've only developed certain parts of it. But, you know, in terms of a larger development site, if you add all these lands together, all these parcels, and you get over 170 or around 170 acres of land that's available in the inventory. And then if you even go beyond the same property owner, start to look at the other commercial properties around this area, you can get upwards of 200 acres or more in a consistent growth area or a developable area. So now we're getting to the point where we take the gross acres and convert them to net acres. This is kind of a chart that shows the amount of gross acres available over time. You can see, you know, we had a decent amount back in 1996 when we first did the plan, and how that land developed over time until we got to 2005 when we started adding more lands through the comprehensive plan updates, and then even in 2008, we jumped up the employment lands quite a bit more. And then as we go through the years, we get some of the agricultural remanded areas removed, so we see a decline in some of the available lands at that point. And getting back to, you know, jurisdictions changing their designations, if you look at the 2014 number there, or bar, you can see where the industrial amount of gross acres has increased over the 2013 number, and the commercial amount went down, and that's because of large changes in comprehensive plan designations. In this case, it was Camas that made a big change to their comprehensive plan map, which resulted in that change. You'll also note, you know, we've been doing this for 20 years or so, and you can see that the amount of land that's available in 2014 is pretty similar to what was available in 1996 when we started. So we continue to add land to the supply.
And that graph shows, is this land that is not developed, which is still available?
Yeah, so the result of the comprehensive land model is amount of gross acres that's available.
Okay. So if it developed, that's why it's decreasing, is because
right.
It developed.
Yeah, so from 1996 to 2004, everything was kind of consistent. There wasn't a whole lot of changes. There weren't any comprehensive plan updates. So all that was pretty much based on land being developed, is why the numbers were going down, or the chart starts to decline.
And the other thing that Ken is also saying is that some of this may not all result as a result of development. Some of it may result, we do our own comp plan amendments, zone changes annually. So when any of this land that is in our inventory changes zoning from commercial to industrial or vice versa, that may impact this chart. But the overall message here is that if you look at since 1996, to 2004. Some of that may be attributed to actual development, and some may be attributed to change in comp plan designation. But as you, if you take that into consideration, you can also see the spikes in the chart. Some of that is when we updated the plan and added land to the urban growth boundary. The 04, that took effect in 05. You can see the bar going up. You see some changes or growth that occurred in between. And then in 07, you see the spike go up, or the chart go up. That's additional land or expansion of the UGA. Then as it begins to drop or change, some of that change is attributed to some land we removed per the court order. And then some are because of the changes in zoning or whatever the case may be, or actual development. Things have been developing slowly, but we are coming out of the recession. That's how to reach this chart.
And this still includes the critical lands that are really not practically developable, right?
It does include everything.
No, so just like the other graph, it's going to come.
Yes.
I think we have to be able to update this one too to show what's really available, because we don't want to overstate the available land.
You will see that again. You will see that number. Can continue.
Yeah, that's what our next discussion is on converting those gross acres to net acres. So we have certain lands that are out of the gross acres. We determine that some of it won't develop. So we look at environmental constraints based on the study we did back in 2005, looking at how lands developed, knowing that some lands that were constrained did develop. We came up with a percentage. We assume that 20% of the commercial land that's constrained will not develop, but 80% of it will. For industrial lands, we assume 50% of the constrained lands will develop. We also take out 25% of the land for infrastructure, for the right-of-way, stormwater facilities, and things like that.
I agree, and all I said in conjunction with that is that I don't have any information yet to inform me what that number will be. Okay.
I think what that translates to is for a given piece of property with the new environmental constraints, you're not going to put as large a building on that property and still responsibly deal with the stormwater, with all that compliance. You probably end up with a smaller footprint for buildings that can actually house employees.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And
more land
is going to be needed. Yeah, when you do this, and that's why it's good to have some basis to change some of this. When it comes to footprint, we have a development code. And you're going to say, what if we use all our development code and someone comes in, and what will be the footprint that they can get on a given property? And over time, as you look at some development that have come in and comply with our code, then you can say, okay, it's, you know, on a piece of 1 acre that has some constrained land, they went through our code, apply all the code requirements. Here's the actual footprint or building, you know, that is on that property. So for now, I don't have that based on
that's
the new reg.
When you go talk to the Responsible Growth Forum, ask them, because the cities, unfortunately, depending on your perspective, the cities are, they haven't implemented some of the same stormwater requirements that we have, because we're phase ones and they're not.
Right.
So they may not be as far along in seeing what the actual percentage is going to be necessary for infrastructure with the new stormwater. But RGF has a bunch of its numbers that are developing in the county that might be able to tell you.
Right. I will ask that today at RGF. I already asked the cities to help me get some numbers that we can share with RGF as well, or the commissioners.
I just wanted to add, too, with mixed use, it's kind of a special case since it can include commercial and residential development. So we assume that 60% of the gross acres that are mixed use will be residential and 40% will develop as commercial. Some different ratios for the special mixed uses that are out there for some of the jurisdictions, but we do account for all that. So this is where we get to, you know, how much land is developable once we take out the lands that we assume won't convert. You can see that with the 50% constrained lands not converting for industrial, we need more land there to get to developable net acres, not quite as much for the commercial side of things. So now we can take a look at the 2014 model results, see what kind of net developable acres we can come up with. So basically for the commercial model, we came up with around 3,800 acres or gross acres. And based on that, we're getting around 2,600 developable net acres. So.
Yes.
Correct, yeah. Looking at the industrial side of things, we have about 7,100 gross acres, which translates to about 3,800.
Half of that, right.
So, about a little over half. So, in conclusion, modeling employment lands can be challenging. There's more variables to consider than residential. There's unpredictable redevelopment in areas that the model can't predict. And there's lands with environmental constraints that do develop, so we need to take that into account. That being said, the model does a good job of indicating where employment lands are and how they've developed over time. Okay, any questions?
We've done 2014. We will also have 2015 run before the board adopts the update to the 2007 plan. So I plan to continue to share the runs output with the cities and the development community. The next step is for the commissioners to select the employment target at your April 1st hearing. I plan to have, as I said, reach out to RGF and the development community to get their input. They also rely on this information, so they are constantly looking at it and providing us input on how to make it better. We are listening and we are incorporating their input. So when I go to them today, I will ask the question on how they can help us given the new regs on stormwater if we're going to change. Because right now we use 27.7% designated for infrastructure, and that includes stormwater. If that needs to change, I need to come back to the board and say that's the only one of the assumptions that I would like the commissioners to change, because we do have information to inform us on that. The cities have input. So again, I will be having a meeting tomorrow with what I'm calling employment stakeholders. They may come to the table and let us know what the board needs to know before you have your hearings. So we're reaching out to other stakeholders for their input. The cities are here. This information will become available to them every time we run the model. We have for their input to make sure that the model is accurately reflecting what is happening in their community. And if there is any add or subtract, they inform us and we make adjustment to that. So in terms of next step, I have confidence in the model and the cities. We've used it for over 20 years. I say this all the time. It was challenged in 94 and it withstood challenge. It was developed jointly between the county staff, the business community, and the environmental community. So this is something that we're constantly looking at and finding ways to change. I'm not planning to. It's not a planning. We don't house it in planning. It's housed in GIS and it's independent, even though they work for the county, but they look at it independently. We use the tool. So next step, I'm coming to your April 1 is the hearing. I would like you to pick an employment target so that we can begin that conversation with the cities to do their allocation and see where we are. They ask for flexibility and some balance. We will make sure that that is done before the board makes a final decision. I'm not sure at this point the decision that you will make where that will lead us, but wherever will lead us, the board will be part of that process until your final gavel comes down.
And I'd like to just add that the 2014 numbers, along with all the other numbers that we ran for previous models, are available out here on the vacant billable lands model maps and data site, which is linked off of the community planning conference plan update site. So you can see the 2014 numbers by countywide report or the details for each of the jurisdictions. So if you want to see CAMAS total, you can see the somewhere on there. Disappeared on me, but sorry, it's not showing up on here for
the second page. That would happen. That was stopped.
Anyway, it is out there. You can see the yield reports. We also have maps for 2014 for the different areas. You can get reports going back, you know, back to 2006.
And will this be linked on a grid? Seriously, can we get that link on the
grid? Yeah, once it's in a work session, the link will be put on the grid.
And we also have maps that we can slide back and forth for the different jurisdictions. So if you wanted to see how the area developed over time, you can go back as far as 1996 and see those maps and run the slider bar to see how it changed over time. So that's available out there for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mouse is not wanting to cooperate. I think the battery's getting low on this thing. So. Let's see.
Time-lapse photography.
Yeah, and then I think if I could put this button here, just play the whole series, yeah.
There. Yeah. You see where it pops and you can see the year it was. Isn't that cool? Yeah. I heard you guys talking.
And again, this is available for each of the jurisdictions. So we're just using Battleground as an example, but this is where I said that they provide us input to make the model better. But again, it shows you over time what have happened.
Thank you.
Questions?
I'm hoping that this will be the last time I'm coming to the board with VBLM work session.
We're work in progress. We got it. Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Great job.
Thanks, Chris, for getting most of the land.